Hi everybody and welcome to Cooking in Real Time. My name is Zora O'Neill and I'm going to be cooking a full dinner for you tonight. You'll be listening along. We're going to be having arroz con pollo, which is really just chicken with rice. Sounds a little dull, but there are some nice touches to it. And a fennel salad on the side. And then, Lord willing, if we get to it, I'll even put a little bit of dessert in the oven. So the first thing I'm gonna do, actually, speaking of the oven, let's turn that on to 350 because the chicken gets baked and we're gonna get that started right up. We also have to brown the chicken, and browning things always takes a little more time than you think it will. I'm putting my big enameled cast iron Dutch oven on the stove. It's a Le Creuset kind of thing that I got, fortunately, secondhand a long time ago. So not as crazy expensive as your standard Le Creuset. It is my super trusty pot. I use it for pretty much everything. Everything that I'm not using cast iron skillets for, that is. So I'm heating that, I'm putting that on the back burner just to keep it out of the way, and I drizzled a little olive oil in there. Not much, because the chicken is gonna give off a little fat while we're browning it. And I've got a package here of chicken thighs. Normally, yes, I am kind of a nose-to-tail, beak-to-tail, whatever, purist, and buy a whole chicken and cut it up. And then I have the little pieces, the odd pieces, and I can use them for stock and things like that. But tonight, I was hungry and in a hurry, so I got chicken thighs. There, I'm setting them in a pan. Now, let's see. I'm just doing three. This is sort of annoying. The last time I made this, I ended up with way more chicken than I wanted and not enough rice. So this time I'm gonna do just three chicken thighs, which leaves a fourth in the pack. I'm just gonna do three chicken thighs and a little more rice. And that's gonna be enough for, definitely enough for two people to have dinner and then a substantial amount of leftovers. You could probably even feed four people, but then they might start wondering why they didn't get a whole chicken thigh all to themselves. The rice with the arroz con pollo, the secret to this is saffron. I won't lie, it is an expensive secret. Recently pointed out to me that it's more expensive than cocaine. Although the price of cocaine has bottomed out, so I don't know if that's relevant. And I don't know if it's still more expensive than gold, because gold has skyrocketed. But the upshot is you shouldn't be afraid to use it, because really you buy some, it's like $3 or $4 for a tiny little pack. You use half that pack. In the long run, you're not gonna miss $1.50 that you spent on dinner, and it's gonna be very worth it. Everything else in the dish is pretty cheap. And you shouldn't skimp and just use turmeric, because although it will turn it a beautiful color, it will have no flavor at all. So the chicken thighs are in there. You can hear them sizzling. I've got them skin side down. I should have said that when I put them in. Skin side down. I've got the heat up to about medium high. I'm going to turn that down a tad, just a hair above medium, so that I can turn my back on them and not have to worry. I'm gonna eat an olive because I'm starving. Excuse me for the chewing. What else have I got to do here? Oh, I'm gonna chop up an onion. That's like the beginning of pretty much every meal. I've got a pretty hefty size onion here. Taking it over to my cutting board, cutting off both ends. Peeling off the peel. Some of that slipped right off, but I have to make another little cut into the onion, into the outermost layer, so that I can grab all that peel and just pull it right off. If you're having a hard time mentally following along with my onion slicing, that's totally fine. There's a little video on the website at cookinginrealtime.com that you can check out that will show exactly what I'm doing. I cut what I call pole-to-pole slices, which is lengthwise along the regular arc of the onion. which is a pretty versatile cut and is handy in just about any recipe. If you're going to learn one way to slice an onion, I recommend this one. All right, so I've got my onion, and I'm going to do a couple cloves of garlic. And while I'm walking past the chicken, I'm going to give it a little poke. Ah, looking good. It is. The skin is just starting to come unstuck from the pan. Ooh, I have some beautiful organic garlic that a friend of mine brought. I'm definitely going to break into that. Something about the garlic in the stores here is so terrible. You can buy it and within about 3 days it all sprouts. So I am forever cutting out the little green core in the middle of the garlic, but this stuff looks beautiful. Big shout out to the Park Slope Co-op. Oh, I wish I lived near there, except then I wouldn't live in Astoria. Always a dilemma. So I've pulled off about 3 big cloves of garlic, and I'm just going to peel those quickly, cut off the little root end on the garlic. It gives you a head start on pulling the peel off. Then I just smash them with my knife. And if you smash them up hard enough, you smash it into a few pieces, and that's pretty good for our purposes. You don't need to chop them much further. Really coarse pieces is fine. Although that one, give a couple more chops too. And there, right. So I'm keeping the garlic a little separate from the onion because you always want to add the garlic later after the onion has been in a little while because it takes longer for the onion to cook than it does for the garlic, and you don't want the garlic getting too brown and turning bitter. So I'm back over here by the chicken. You can hear it spattering away. Oh, good. Flipping it. It's pretty nice and golden brown. It could get a little darker, but I'm in a hurry. So I'll just flip those over. And it's giving off a lot of grease. So I'm going to get a little bowl ready. Set that out to pour the grease off into. What else am I going to want for this? Oh, my saffron, of course. What did I do with that? The incredibly expensive ingredient that should not be in this place. Oh, here it is. Oh, smarter than I thought. I pulled it out earlier. So I've got got a generous pinch of saffron here. It's the leftovers of a box I had used. Man, years ago, I was lucky enough to have a friend bring a giant bag of saffron to me from Iran via some friends, and it was such a treat. I got to using it completely wantonly. I'm just letting that brown, the chicken brown a little bit. And while that's going on, measure out the rice. Basically, I want everything ready to roll as soon as the chicken is out. I'm using sushi rice for this. You can basically use any kind of rice. If you choose a long grain rice, the end result will be a little more delicate because the grains of rice won't stick together so much. And if you use a shorter grain rice, your rice will be a little bit stickier. I just use sushi rice because we have so much of it, and sushi rice is a short grain. I'm going to put in, let's see, a cup and a quarter of rice, I guess. I used a cup last time, and like I said, it wasn't quite enough relative to the amount of chicken I had. I'll put the rice away. Oh, I know, there's one other thing to chop up. And that is going to be a little red pepper, red bell pepper. Pulling that out. I've already cut into about 2/3 of a pepper. I don't think I'll use quite all of that. Maybe half of a large pepper. And I'm just going to cut that into slices first. Doesn't have to be totally regular. Slightly sloppy pieces. So I've cut that all into long slices, and then I'm just going to turn, stack the slices up and turn them around, and now I'm cutting them crosswise into little squares. That looks about right. Actually, I'll go ahead and use the whole pepper I've got here. It's a generous half of a pepper. Basically, if you're ever in doubt about how much of an ingredient to use, whatever you have is going to be the perfect amount. And however much time you have is going to be probably the perfect amount of time for cooking. So as long as you can keep that flexibility in mind, you're fine. Fortunately in cooking, it's not true in baking, but fortunately in cooking, there's a lot of leeway in any dish you're preparing. So just work with what you have and get used to that. You'll end up with some pretty good things, even if they don't look exactly like what the photo in the cookbook shows. All right, you'll be glad when these chicken thighs are done. Pulling them out. They're very nicely brown on both sides. And that pan is smoking hot. This is about when you should be mentally wondering how sensitive your smoke alarm is. Ours is kind of sensitive, and I should turn on the fan. It's gonna be very loud. Sorry. Yeah, now is about the time to mention that it is very important to have good ventilation in your kitchen. It's a huge deterrent to cooking if your smoke alarm goes off every time you try to do it. So you wanna set up an exhaust fan in your window and turn it on at the slightest hint of trouble. What did I just do with all my olive oil? Clever me, I had it out and I put it away. All right, grab that again. So I poured out all the chicken fat. Sorry, while I was warning you about ventilation, I was pouring out my chicken fat out of my pan. Got a little distracted there. I drained all that chicken fat off into that waiting bowl. I like chicken fat. It lends a great flavor, but it is very easy for this dish to get way too greasy and your rice is like saturated. I poured out the chicken fat. I drizzled in a tiny bit more olive oil, and now I'm throwing in the onions. Walking back and forth here to the cutting board. This one was a big onion. All right, here we go. And I'll go ahead and throw in the red peppers as well. This time I'm being smart and putting them in a bowl so I can carry them to the stove more easily. So the red peppers and the onions, but not the garlic. We'll wait on the garlic. And I'm gonna go ahead and put in 2 big pinches of salt right away. They help soften up the onions right away. If you do it first thing, then you're less likely to forget. All right, so they're in. I'm just gonna give them a stir to get them coated. The heat is up very high. I'm gonna turn it down to medium proper because the onions are always already getting little brown spots on them. Which we just want these onions to get just a little soft. They don't need to have a lot of color. They just need to turn translucent and go a little limp. The pan was so hot, though, that they are browning. And that's okay. No problem. While that's going, I'm going to perform a quick skinectomy on these chicken thighs. I love chicken skin too, but you can't keep the skin on these chicken thighs. It just gets all soggy, and nobody really likes soggy chicken skin. They only like crispy. If you have browned your chicken thighs really well, the skin is actually crispy enough to be appealing, but somehow that seems like cheating if you're not picking it off a whole roasted chicken. Oh wait, though. That bite was nice and crunchy. But that's about the only one that got dangerously close to just squishy fat. So, all right, skin is off the 3 chicken thighs, which sadly does leave this exposed side of like totally white flesh, but that's all right. The other side is nicely browned. I'm stirring the onions again. Ooh, maybe I didn't need such a big onion. That's a lot. looks good. I'm gonna put in the garlic now, and I'm going to put in the saffron. So saffron, a lot of recipes will tell you to toast it in a dry pan beforehand, and you can definitely do that. I do think it brings out the flavor a little bit better, and it also makes the threads a little more brittle, so they break up into pieces, so you don't have big chunks of, well, chunks is exaggerating, but you don't have big visible pieces of saffron in whatever you're cooking. And I sometimes do that, but this time I'm really just focusing on getting everything in the pot to start it cooking, so just toss the whole saffron threads in, and I'm stirring around with the onions and garlic. Okay, now everything's looking all nicely oiled up. I think the next thing I'm gonna do is toss in my rice. So I've got a cup and another quarter of a cup. I need to remember that so I can remember how much water to put in. I have a terrible mental block about water and rice. Part of the problem is that each kind of rice takes a slightly different amount of water. And I grew up eating nothing but brown rice, which is a straight 2-to-1 water to rice ratio. And everything after that is like, oh, more complicated math. I don't know if I can handle it. So I'm gonna go with about 1.5 times the amount of water, which is gonna be almost 2 cups. You could also use chicken stock. Actually, would make a more flavorful overall dish, but you don't have to. I happen to be out of chicken stock at the moment. I'm not totally out. I have some in the freezer, but take too long for it all to defrost. So I'm just gonna use water. There's enough flavor in the residual chicken fat that was left in the pan and from the chicken itself and from the saffron. So that's definitely in its favor. So now I've got the rice, I've got that all sort of coated and covered in oil. And now I'm nestling the little pieces of chicken into the rice, little chicken thighs. If you're feeling like you wanted to stretch this dish, I would cut some of the meat off the chicken thigh and make it a total of 6 chunks of meat in here instead of 3 whole thighs, just so people can pick around and pick out exactly how much meat they want. But I'm gonna leave these whole, and I'm gonna add my water, however much that is gonna be. Where are my measuring cups again? Now is about the time. I'm doing a mental checklist. Have I forgotten to put anything in? There is one more ingredient, which is peas, which add a beautiful color to the whole dish and make it seem very springy. Something about green peas is always so like, oh, finally, the spring is here. Unfortunately, in my case, the spring is not quite here. It is still really cold here in New York. Not very pleasant. All right. Digging around, getting the lid out for the pot. And I've got the covered. I'm just gonna slide that into the oven. All right. Great, turn off my burner. Take a little pause here and tidy up while I think of everything else. Oh, I can turn off the fan. Ah, peace. All right, so little salad that's gonna go inside. It's just a little fennel salad. As I was saying, peas make me think of spring, but it's not quite spring. This arroz con pollo is a great dish for this time of year because you can add the peas and think green thoughts, but the bright yellow in the rice is such a wonderful color and kind of thing you're craving after a long, dreary winter. So it's a great cheater spring dish to get you in the mood, but still have something that's sort of hearty and satisfying and a little bit rib sticking in case it's still sort of cold out. Just washed off my little fennel bulb. Fennel is something you can get pretty reliably all through fall and winter. Just got one fennel bulb here, and you would be surprised. They look very small, but once you sort of slice them up as a raw salad, they provide quite a lot of material to to work with. So I'm just going to cut up half of my little fennel bulb, and that I think is going to be enough for two people. We just want a little something crunchy on the side because we're going to get enough vegetables with our peas. This is one time. I'm not going to have a proper green salad. I'm just cutting these fennel into little relatively thin slices, but not making myself crazy. Part of the nice thing about fennel is how crunchy it is, so if you cut it too thin, you lose the crunch. Cutting the last little bit thin is always a little hairy. Just keep your fingers out of the way of the knife. It's always the key. All right, so I've got my fennel sliced up. Testing it. And all I'm gonna do with that is cut up an orange, mix that in. Again, it's like the tail end of the winter here. Fennel and orange, sort of a wintry salad, but the colors are very welcome. I've cut off both ends. I've got this orange here and I've cut off both ends, and then I'm just taking my knife, set the orange on one of the flat cut ends. Taking my knife and I'm cutting the peel off. I'm just cutting around the curve of the orange. This leads to a little bit of waste. The ideal thing is to use a long, skinny, flexible knife, what in the trade is known as a boner, what you'll see sold in stores as a boning knife, more politely. So you could pull out that knife. I have one, but again, I'm kind of in a hurry. So just using my regular heavy chef's knife, and I'm done with that. So now I have this sort of naked, slightly odd-shaped orange. I'm just going to tip it on its side and cut it in thin rings. And there are some seeds in there. We got these as juice oranges, so they're not the optimal orange. It is a nice time of year. There's still some good oranges left in the stores. Just the end of the winter citrus season wrapping up. I feel like I finally, this year, ate almost as many tangerines as I would like to. I bought several giant boxes and bags. I've got my round orange slices, and now I'm cutting them in half again just to make them more biteable. It's just so I don't have to wrestle with them on my fork. I'm throwing those in on top of the fennel. I'm just gonna hold the bowl here by the cutting board and scrape all the juices that have collected on the board. Scrape those, you don't want those to go to waste. And, I think I'm gonna try something. Well, no, I was gonna say I might try a little walnut oil on this because that can be so delicious. But I think we're sticking with the Spanish theme from the saffron rice, so I think olive oil is fitting. And to be honest, by the time you're hearing this podcast there, I just put a little glug of olive oil on the fennel and oranges. Tiniest drizzle. You really don't need much. By the time you hear this, I will actually be in Spain, which is another reason I am cooking this, just to get myself in the mood. And I'm mentally saying arroz con pollo over and over again to practice my sexy Spanish lisp. I'm sprinkling a little salt over the fennel and orange, and I'm sort of, stirring that up and, throwing some on the floor. I guess I shouldn't be telling you that I'm eating it off the floor. So clean you can eat off it, I swear. It's up to you. If the same thing happens in your house, you can simply be the judge whether it's still edible. All right, a little salt, tiny bit of pepper if you want it. And that is pretty good to go. Cleaning off my cutting board. All right, that means we have plenty of time to get a little dessert ready. While the chicken is cooking, it's only been in there for, not even 10 minutes. So, no problem. Now, honestly, I don't make dessert all that often. People are coming over, then I do muster some kind of a dessert, but on a regular nightly basis, I really don't do anything. I have kind of a sweet tooth as it is. I don't need to ramp it up further by having a full sweet treat at the end of every meal. I figure the less sugar I eat, the more fat. It all trades off perfectly. And so far, that logic seems to have worked. Now, where did I put my clafu tea recipe? Yes. Clafu tea is the French way of saying this. When I was growing up, clafu tea was the standard dish my mom often took to potlucks, but we would always laugh and, of course, call it clafouties, which is much more fun to say than clafu tea. It's C-L-A-F-O-U-T-I-S, hence the French pronunciation, and hence the childish, sounds like a disease, American pronunciation. Clafouti is basically sort of eggy, almost crepe batter that you usually whisk up in the blender. You can whisk it up by hand too if you don't have a blender, but it's very simple to make in the blender. And it's sort of like a big popover. You pour it into a skillet and you throw some fruit on it and you stick it in the oven and the whole thing puffs up beautifully like a big, very, very briefly like a souffle. It collapses the instant you take it out of the oven. It is not meant for durability. But it makes a really nice dessert because it's not super sweet, but it's kind of a nice treat. The only sweetness you get is from the fruit, and the traditional fruit is cherries, fresh cherries, usually fresh sour cherries with the pits still in them because it gives it a really nice nutty flavor. Oh, and while I'm talking, I'm remembering I have to leave the kitchen. There's a special ingredient. There's usually cherries and a little bit of kirsch, which is cherry-flavored brandy. And tonight, I'm going to be using raspberries instead. So, I think this is a chance to pull out the ridiculous Chambord from the liquor cabinet that is lurking back there in its ostentatious gold-trimmed bottle. So, I like nothing better than an excuse to pull out the Chambord. You don't have to go crazy about matching your booze to the kind of fruit you're using in the clafouti, but if you have an opportunity like this one, I hate to pass it up. All right, back in the kitchen, tidying up a tiny bit more before I pull out all the baking business. It's just a little flour and 6 eggs, which is a lot. At which point I wonder, do we have 6 eggs? Yes, and this is gonna make a big serving. The nice thing, as I was saying about clafu tea, is that it's not very sweet. The sweetness comes from the fruit. And because it's not very sweet, then you can just eat it for breakfast and not feel so bad. So it's almost, and there's so many eggs in it, you kind of feel like you're getting something hearty in the morning. So I always like to make one, have a little chunk of it after dinner, and then the next morning have it for breakfast. Butter. Just a little bit of butter. And that butter, I'm stealing a trick from good southern makers of cornbread. Basically, I'm gonna make this in a cast iron skillet, and I'm gonna melt that butter. I'm gonna stick the skillet in the oven to preheat. Not yet, though. I'm just getting it ready by putting the butter in the skillet. So I'm gonna throw all that in the oven to preheat. Right now, I'm gonna take this opportunity to peer in here at my rice, and I'm gonna add the last ingredient to the arroz con pollo, which is peas, delectable little green peas. And I know it's spring and I know it's pea season, but I never, ever, ever buy peas fresh at the produce place because unless they were picked like 2 hours before, they're just really bad. The sugars in peas turn to starch so fast, like honestly, within a matter of hours. So anything you get at the store, they will have been sitting around for quite some time, and they just won't be all that great. And besides, pretty much all the time, they sell them still in their little shells, and then you need an army of small children to shell them for you on top of it all. I'm just taking my little frozen peas straight from the box. This is about a third of a 10-ounce box. Looks like maybe a cup of peas. And I'm just gonna scatter them over the rice and the chicken in here. You don't wanna add them along with everything else because they kind of lose some of their beautiful green color if they cook too much. So you want to give everything else about a 10-minute head start. And I'm just sort of stirring in the peas a little bit. Actually, I'm going to flip over my chicken thighs because they put them with the white side up, and that was very unappealing to pull the lid off and see these big pale bits of chicken sitting there. Much nicer. Okay. I probably could have added a few more peas. I really like the peas. They're very sweet. So in my mind, you can't have too many of them. If I'd had half a box, I would have definitely added the whole thing. But I didn't. So again, however much I have is the perfect amount, which is what makes it a little hard to write the recipes up for the website. But you understand. So back to the clafoutis. I've got everything out here, I think. And the nice thing is you can just measure everything right into the blender jar. I've got some vanilla. Calls for a tablespoon of vanilla, which means a lot in my mind. Just give it a big glug. I can afford to be very, very generous with my vanilla because I have a giant, giant bottle of it I bought in Mexico. A liter of vanilla, in fact. So maybe if you don't have a huge stash like that I do, you actually want to measure it out. Tablespoon of vanilla, 6 eggs. And yes, I am reading this off a recipe because you never really should tinker with baking too much. Bakers are the world's most precise and fanatical people, and they have to be because baking requires all kinds of at least vague understanding that you should not mess with the basic rules of chemistry. There's so much more leeway in cooking, which is why I do it more than baking. But baking, you can follow a recipe, and if you can follow a recipe carefully, you can be an excellent, excellent baker. And so, since I'm not innately an excellent baker, I'm definitely following this recipe, which is one I got from Sever magazine many, many years ago. I actually had the foresight to cut it out and tape it into a notebook I have. And it's a pretty standard. You'll see lots of recipes for this once you start looking around, but the portions are all basically the same. There's nothing too complicated in it. Vanilla, eggs, sugar. This calls for 6 tablespoons of sugar. I think I might put in a tiny bit less, which, yeah, is where I start getting into trouble. This I will measure. I think I'll make it 5 tablespoons. I'm doing that because I know the raspberries I have a little bit of sugar in them already. 3, 4, 5. And let's see. 2 tablespoons of Kirsch, but in my case, it's going to be 2 tablespoons of Chambord, which is totally silly. It is probably going to make my batter this weird pink color. Let's see how that goes. Licking out the spoon on that one. It's like grown-up topping for your ice cream sundae. Let's see, a little milk, 1 1/4 cups of milk. Getting out my Pyrex measuring cup. If you're not already aware, there are 2 kinds of measuring cups it's good to have in the kitchen. You want 1 for liquids, which are these cup-shaped ones with measurings up the side. And then you want another set of set scoops for measuring dry things like flour, so you can dip in and level off the amount exactly. I'm using my liquid measuring cup. Pouring the milk right in the blender. Giving that a rinse right away. What else? But vanilla, eggs, sugar, milk, Kirsch, salt, pinch of salt. Baked things pretty much always need a little bit of salt. It's easy to forget about that, especially if you're using unsalted butter, but you should always add a teeny bit of salt. And even if you are using salted butter, it's hard to grossly oversalt your baked things. I mean, it is possible, obviously, but just don't skip the salt is all I'm saying. 3/4 cup of flour. And now, yes, I will get out my little dry measuring cups. Got my 1/4 cup size here. Yeah, listening to me bake is not nearly as interesting in my mind as listening to me cook. There's no sizzling, there's no running back and forth, there's no chopping. It's just measuring, measuring, measuring. All right, this is all going in the blender. And it's just gonna, I'm gonna whiz it up and then it can just rest there for a second while the rice finishes off. Put the flour away right away. It's always something that's taking up space, and I'll put away the vanilla as well. All right, brace yourself for noise. Putting the blender on. So, yeah, media blackout. Can't hear a thing while that's blending. All right, that'll do for now. Give it another whiz right before I pour it into the pan. And I'll just take this opportunity to tidy everything up fully, because we're just a few minutes off, which is great. That's all been in there for about 22 minutes. I'm gonna give it a full 25 if I can. Come back here and stir up our fennel salad. It's kind of a chunky little salad, but again, I'm not sure if I've explained my overall theory of meal combinations. I don't think I've gotten into it too much. But I always want a combination of textures when I'm eating. So I'm thinking the rice and chicken is going to be a little soft. I know from experience the rice gets a little gooey, gets a little chewy. So in contrast with that, I'm going to want a nice crispy something to nosh on. And the fennel salad is just exactly crispy and very bright tasting. A nice complement to the sort of soft sweetness that the saffron and the peas and everything lend to the rice. Right, I would recommend that you wash dishes right now. I'm not gonna wash all of these. I'm just getting them sort of organized in the sink for later. If I washed them all, you wouldn't be able to hear a thing I'm saying. So that gets me off the hook. One last thing that we're gonna put on the rice, which I often forget, but this time I put it out beforehand. The last thing is I always put a nice squeeze of lemon all over the rice. It really brings a nice brightness to the whole thing in the end. So I'm cutting up the lemon right now, so I have it out. Peter has just come in and has seized on the chambord. I knew it. He's pouring himself a glass. Oh my God. No dessert for you. You've already used up your allotment of sickly sweet. All right, wait, let me have a sip of that. Ooh. Ooh.
This on vanilla ice cream is the best.
I was already talking about it being a grown-up Sunday topping. Mm. Whoa, yum. Okay. What else am I getting out? I'm getting out the fruit for the clafoutis, because I'm going to throw that in. And actually, all right, we've got the chicken's been in for about 25 minutes. So I'm going to stick the skillet. I have a big cast iron skillet, and I have a couple tablespoons of butter, or just a tablespoon of butter stuck in that skillet. And I'm gonna stick that whole thing in the oven for that to preheat. And I'm gonna turn the bake temp up to 425. So that'll be ready to roll. Basically, my work here is done as soon as I put the clafoutis in the oven. I'm not gonna make you sit through us eating dinner just for the sake of completion. Sorry, snacking on the fennel. Can I recommend, if you come home and you're starving, that's the moment where you want to order takeout because you just need the food immediately. Get in the habit of keeping some cheese and crackers, some olives, some tiny little snacky things. Have those on hand. Snack on those right before you start cooking. You'll stave off the desperate urge to order takeout. And you'll probably end up producing something to eat within about the time it would take for the delivery guy to come anyway. So it's just all about managing the hunger. Which is getting dangerously close tonight, but it makes everything taste better. All right, so I've got some raspberries here that I'm going to use in the clafoutis. And I'm just going to pour those out in a bowl. Generally, these are frozen raspberries, by the way. Again, like the frozen peas, frozen raspberries are often just as good, if not better, than what you can get in the store, especially in the off-season. There's no reason to buy raspberries that have been flown up here from Argentina or wherever they're grown. Totally, totally impractical when these frozen ones are sitting in your freezer case. And they have the benefit of having been picked and immediately frozen. So there's really no loss of flavor. Same with the peas. I've got a good, actually, why don't I measure how much fruit I have here? That would be a novel approach. I've gotten so used to eyeballing things that my perception of like about a cup is probably totally off. Okay, that's a cup and a half of fruit. And you want it to still be relatively frozen when you toss it in, just because otherwise it creates this huge gooey mess. And of course you can use fresh fruit. If you have great fresh fruit, by all means use it. I mean, the recipe was devised for fresh fruit, so. Oh, the oven is still at 385. I'm gonna peek at the chicken right now. Just took the lid off. Ooh, looks good. Make sure the rice is done all the way through. Perfect. Could use a little extra salt, but I'm actually going to hold off salting it until after I squeeze on the lemon, because often salt and any kind of acid are the big ways of adjusting your food flavor. And often, I know I'm guilty of this, I rely on salt pretty heavily, and I probably have a palate that is very adjusted for salt because I use so much of it. But often a dish that doesn't get magically transformed by sprinkling a little salt on it, often what it needs then is a little acid. So keep in mind the options there. So I'm going to hold off probably a spritz of lemon all over this. It's going to make it taste perfect. And I won't need any more salt. All right. Oven is up to 415, so that's good. I'm going to pull out the skillet. Like I said, this way of preheating the skillet with the fat in it is something you read in good and proper cornbread recipes. Basically, you have the whole thing all nicely hot and ready to roll, so when you pour in the batter, it sears right away. Giving the batter one last quick whiz. It's more effective, of course, with cornbread, where you have this nice crunchy effect going on, but in with the batter. Fills up my 10-inch skillet about halfway, and I'm just going to scatter in the raspberries. Try to make them sort of even in there, but they're just basically bobbing around in the liquid batter. All right, and happily in that time, the oven has hit 425. Oh, yeah, so heavy. All right. I love cast iron, but did I mention it's heavy? All right, 425, and that is in, and it's gonna take about half an hour, which is just enough time to sit and eat. Unfortunately, it smells pretty good, so you don't really lose track of it in the oven. You smell it baking. Here, I'm just rinsing out my blender, putting some water in my blender right away so that doesn't get in there. Okay, so I think we're done. Clafoutis is in the oven. Check back on that in half an hour. And right now, sit down to eat. We have a little arroz con pollo, and we have a little fennel salad with oranges on the side. And yeah, dessert later, which is a rare treat around these parts. Okay, thanks for listening in. This has been the Cooking in Real Time podcast. Like I said, I'm Zora O'Neill, and I really welcome all of your suggestions. If you have anything you'd like me to cook and explain as I go, then by all means, send your suggestions to Zora@cookinginrealtime.com. Any other comments are welcome. Any recipes you kind of want to try but are a little scared to, forward them my way, and I will do my best to explain what is crucial and what is not. And just any nagging cooking questions. I love to hear what people are going through. Anyway, drop me a line, stay in touch, Zora at cookingandrealtime.com, and talk to you next week. Thanks for listening.